happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
The most successful team in the history of professional sports. Starting the new millennium, the New York Yankees are once again world champions.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Oh, every time I hear this one, it reminds, takes me back to the day. Shoot! Back when the Knicks and Pacers were playing every year. Reggie Miller will be on the call game two. Looking forward to that. I want him on every call.
How long into game two before he brings up the calls at the end of game one?
Reggie?
Before or after the first time out of the game?
Oh, before. It's going to be, yeah. I mean, but that's...
Pre-game doesn't count, but once they tip the ball off,
yeah.
I think, yeah, before the first time out. So within those first 4 to 6 minutes.
Right. Now, but I feel different about this, I would think, than most. Like, I know Richard Jefferson pissed a lot of people off. When he was on the call for the Knick game, taking what they perceived jabs at the Knicks, whether they were real or imagined. And it bothered people. And I could understand that. I could. Like, if you don't like it, I thought it was a bit much. I wish, you know, I think fans get too hung up on that. But I could understand you don't want someone that you feel or perceive as is a Knick hater. But when it's someone that, like when it's Reggie Miller, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I'm kind of looking forward to the idea that Reggie Miller is going to be on the call for a Knicks-Pacers game.
Like, yeah, because I want to see Jalen Brunson drop 40
right,
and
exactly.
crying through the entire broadcast.
Exactly right. Right. I want to see him. I want him to be caused pain doing the broadcast. But I like the villain. I like the theater of it all. Like I'm looking forward to him on the broadcast. I wish they'd put him on every single game. I don't know how many other games he's going to do, but I especially at the games at the Garden, how do you not have Reggie Miller on the broadcast if he's one of your broadcasters? What is he doing? What was he doing last night? What was Reggie Miller too busy
doing?
He
was at the Minnesota-Denver game.
Switch it up. What do you got him doing that game for?
The next TNT game after game two. So TNT has the games at the Garden. ABC ESPN has the ones in Indiana. So game five. Send Reggie back to the Garden.
Let's go. If there is one.
The way it looked tonight, Minnesota, Denver, that'll already be over.
Crazy, huh? They've absolutely dominated that series so far. And, you know, but the Knicks need to go get Anthony Edwards. I mean, he's becoming, I mean, right now he's having an incredible playoff run. What did he score, 27 in this game? 27, 11 of 17, 7 assists. Yeah, I mean, not a brilliant game, but they won 106-80.
And just to protect yourself, you might want to tell whoever missed it, that was a call. Somebody said in earnest last week, like, the Knicks have to just
go
get
Anthony Edwards. I'm sorry, yeah. If you're just listening and think I'm just opining about Anthony Edwards coming to the Knicks, we've got a guy who's called twice in the last week, maybe once a week over the last 2 weeks, saying that's the guy the Knicks need to go target. And, you know, I found it funny because I don't think Minnesota's going to let him go. I don't know. Call me crazy. But, yeah, I mean, Jokic is a 16 points. He's a negative. Jokic. Why am I saying Jokic? I'm losing my mind. Jokic is a 16 minus 16 points, minus 16. Murray, only 8 points in this game. He's also a minus 16. 0 for 4 from three-point land. 13 rebounds. I mean, they're just getting blown out. Obviously, I didn't get to see a lot of the second half of that game. And I was driving for the first half. But the Knicks steal game one. Sean in Manhattan was at the game. What's up, Sean?
Hey, my man. How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
My God, how am I doing?
How are we doing? You were at the game last night?
Tonight. Just got home.
Yeah, I know it's life. I got to always, I know that for you it's last night, but if I don't remind myself by always calling yesterday, I lose it. So I gotta always call last night. But I hear you. For tonight, it's tonight. I get it.
Man, so look, I was at Philly game six.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Came here game one, and I was nervous. Right, I mean, who couldn't be? You know, I mean, we're being down, We're low on depth. Brunson. I mean, the MVP conversation towards Brunson.
Yeah.
I had 21 points, what, in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, 21 points in the fourth quarter. 21 of his 43. Yep.
I mean, this team is something else.
No, I mean, listen, they're crazy. I mean, it's just all these games down the stretch. I mean, what was the? I mean, I know the vibe at the Garden is always crazy. Were you? Was there anything outside the Garden? I'm just seeing now videos of them shutting down 7th Avenue.
Yeah. No, I do comedy, and there's a guy, Kosha Dills. I don't know. You come across him. He does the freestyling with Fat Joe outside of MSG.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He had some fun right outside of there. And I know the guy first, but man, let me tell you, that game to enter the fourth quarter like that and to turn it all around, man. And I mean, look, I cannot underestimate what Josh Hart.
I agree with you. I think Josh Hart was a huge part of this game. Huge.
And I mean, look, like Devo, he eats up at the end. And we got, you know, like my all right. So my thoughts here is we're low on depth, and Deuce and Precious, you could see they were on short leashes.
Yeah, no doubt.
If they missed it, you know, I mean TJ McConnell over Deuce, that's not going to happen again. I've been watching these Knicks for too many years to just always expect the worst, but. This was the game the Pacers came out flying, you know. I mean, like they gave it all. I mean, and for us to take down, you know, shut down Haliburton to an extent, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, he's kind of shutting down. He doesn't look right offensively. He's still making good passes. He's still inside the offense, but his shooting woes is his ability to get to the basket is just not the same.
Yeah, and I'll let OB keep shooting, right? You know, that was
To be fair, he played well in this game. He was pumped to get back on the Garden floor in a big spot.
Absolutely, but there was nothing like that little hot dog dunk of his in the last minute led to that 5-on-4 fast break where
yep.
Devo hits that three.
Yep,
and. I mean, this team is now transformed from the young guys to the pros. You know, it feels like this is a team that is just professionals and they're looking to win and to be led by Brunson. I mean, 21 points.
He's scoring 40 points a night. And thank you for the call. He's scoring 40 points a night. He's been incredible. And he scored 21 in the fourth quarter. He makes all the big plays. And I agree. I thought Hart was an integral part of this game. Through a lot of the game, the best offense they got was transition from, like you just said, right, the dunk leads to a quick basket. That's like off misses, off makes. If he got the rebound, he was taking misses to the basket. I mean, he doesn't hit a three-pointer. Like we talked about, he scores, I'm on the Minnesota box score now. He scores, Josh Hart scores 24 points in this game. He hit one three-pointer. He got to the paint. He got to the basket. He took 8 foul shots. I would venture to say that's probably as many foul shots as he took in any game in the Philadelphia series. He was getting to the rim. He got 13 rebounds in the game. He continues to just be a rebounding machine. And him taking it to the basket was as big as it gets. I mean, it was as important for a while there. That was their best offensive play was Josh Hart in transition. And if you look at the other guys on the team, especially, you know, what we've seen in these playoffs, Anunoby can be a real big piece. He can get his own shot a little bit. He hits the big threes. He creates momentum. He can play defense. He's extremely valuable. DiVincenzo, if he's hitting threes, last night 5 for 9, he hit big threes. His threes get the crowd going more than anybody else's. Like he could play a little bit of defense. He can get to the rim as well. Sometimes he tries that reverse layup crap too much instead of just going strong to the basket. But he's very important. But to me, Josh Hart is the second most important player on this team because he brings up the ball a lot. He runs the offense. His transition from the rebound into offense creates a lot of mismatches and easy points a lot and getting to the foul line a lot. He's hit big threes as well. He's hit big shots. And his rebounding and his offensive rebounding in particular is enormous for this team. Josh Hart has been everything you could possibly want from a guy with his skill set profile. I mean, it's just, he's the glue. He's, when you think of the words we use to describe this Knick team can be used for Brunson, absolutely, but they define who Josh Hart is. Like, they define who he is. When we talk about the gritty, tough Knicks that make the right play in the big moment, they rebound, they defend. I mean, it's a microcosm of Josh Hart. When you describe the Knicks, you describe a lot, you know, again, Brunson, yes, a lot of the guys, but they do other things. Like, this is gritty, tough, and, you know, rebounding and defense is literally what Hart provides. Mike in Brooklyn, what's up, Mike?
Hey there.
Hey there, what's going on?
Hey, so I saw the game. I confess I've been watching the Knicks since Sixers game one. We were in a watering hole here in Brighton Beach, and this Brunson guy is like a superstar skateboarder who has already completed the move in his mind. And then
it's an interesting analogy.
He comes through the move, and what comes out of that could be a pass, a shot, or whatever. He's kind of a magical guy. What I noticed was, he does a trick thing where they come on him with two guys and they let him do that. The screen goes away and then he can dump it to the screen or he can shoot because he can get by those two guys with his stutter dribble, whatever that move is. But after the game was over, and it was a crazy game where we kind of saved it out of a hat, you know, if you will,
mm-hmm.
We saw the Timberwolves play the Nuggets and we were like, oh my God, these guys are so athletic. They destroyed them.
Yeah.
I hope the coaches are ready for that. That's all. That's my statement for tonight. I think we can handle the Pacers and even the next round.
No, Mike, let's not go there. We are not worrying about how we're going to match up against the Minnesota Timberwolves in the NBA Finals. We're not doing it. Not doing it. Not after game one where I thought they were outplayed. Not after game one where I thought they were outplayed. The Pacers, if you ask me, watching the entire game, who was the better team? I would tell you the Indiana Pacers. I thought the Indiana Pacers had the better of the play. I thought the Indiana Pacers pushed the tempo. I thought the Indiana Pacers played the game they wanted. If you went into the Indiana Pacers locker room before the game and either listened to them talk it up and scheme or just flat out ask them, how do you want this game to go? They would describe a lot of what happened. This game went the way the Pacers wanted to go up until the last 5-8 minutes of the game. I mean, so I'm not ready. As much as that's encouraging to me, because I don't expect that to be the case the entire series, and the fact that they can't win even when the game goes 90% their way screams to me that this Knicks team is going to win this series, we still have to go through it. Because if it's not for, you know, you get an off night from Brunson where he just can't, you know, hit a shot and scores 17 points or something, the Knicks are going to lose. You need 35-40 from Brunson if you want to win. So let's just make sure we're all comfortable about what's going on before we start projecting and prognosticating how they're going to go about taking Anthony Edwards on in the NBA Finals. It's a little bit premature. But I'm pumped. I got to admit, I'm pumped about this Knick team. Frank in Montvale. What's up, Frank?
Hey, big man.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Go New York. Go New York. Go New York.
Go New York. Go New York. Go.
I was listening to Keith earlier, and I got to tell you, okay, there's a lot to be said about baseball versus football versus basketball, because these guys with a limited bench,
yes,
can do more than what I and you know, they were talking, and Sean had called Keith earlier about Reggie Jackson and the signing and everything and what he did for the Yankees. But you know what? There are a lot of guys. This is a limited team, a limited bench, And, you know, watching the game the whole time, I kind of felt like the Pacers were fast. They, you know, it was going the other way a little bit. But you know what? They find a way towards the end. And it's a limited bench. And, yes, if Julius was there, I really believe it would bring him over the top to get to the end. But you know, looking at this team, what they are compared to the Rangers, to the Yankees, to all these other teams that have many, many, many guys over the years, what they are doing is incredible. And I have to say, God bless them, and go Knicks.
Yeah, okay. You got it, Franco. I'm sorry. I thought you were done. We're up against the break anyway. I appreciate the call. No, I agree with you. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. They're special down the stretch of these games. They hit, DiVincenzo's three. I mean, they hit the big shots. Now they get the big plays, too, and we could do that when we come back. When we come back, let's talk about some of the key elements of this game, because I'm just being by, I'll give him credit. Why not? He's interacting with the show. I'll give it to him. Clown Takes Only, Kevin Ollie Goat, is showing me all the different calls that went against the Pacers and how the Knicks really blew it. So you saw the pool report interview conducted by The Athletic with crew chief Zach Zarba, and he admits on a call that the referees missed. So we'll get to that and some of the different calls that might have changed the game that everybody's complaining about.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
David Wells has pissed up perfect game. 27 up, 27 down. Baseball immortality for David Wells. And the Yankees win. The Yankees win.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 124, McMonagle here with you. 877-337-6666. All right, so obviously, everybody seems to have an opinion about the end of this game, and many people, Knick haters and players alike, as I saw Joel Embiid just right around the time of the Knick game just tweeted out, LOL. I hate when they're cryptic like that. I mean, again, maybe in the moment, I don't know exactly when he tweeted it, what was going on. I mean, I'm assuming it's the offensive screen call. But everyone seems to be really upset and think the Knicks got lucky. Now, did they get the benefit of a call here or there? Yeah, I mean, yes, sure. That's what happens in a basketball game. But the one that really stands out, if you really want to be fair about it, there's 51 seconds left. The Knicks have the ball. Jalen Brunson tries to make a pass to DiVincenzo, and which player was it again? I just was watching the highlight. I can't find it now. I think it was it Nemhard or was it Naismith? It was one of them. Anyway, it's called a kickball when it's clearly it's called on Naismith. Yeah, so Naismith is defending in. Obviously, Jalen Brunson tries to bounce pass it to DiVincenzo, and it clearly hits Naismith's hand and not his foot, and it's called a kickball. It's 51 seconds in a tie game. That play is not reviewable. It would have clearly been the Pacers' ball. I don't know if they would have scored or not, but it was in such a position where the transition might have led to a basket. I don't know. But they would have had the ball. It's clearly called a kickball when it doesn't hit a foot. Much like Jalen Brunson had that play where he was on the sidelines trying to bring the ball to the court, dribbles it off the defender's ankle. It's called out of bounds and Pacers basketball. And luckily, the Knicks had a challenge, and that's a challengeable play, and they got a look at it, and it was a clear fix, Knick basketball. This play clearly was not a kickball. It should have been the Pacers' ball. The Knicks get it. It leads to a three-pointer from DiVincenzo. Knicks take a three-point lead. It is by far, of all the plays, whether you want to talk about the Jalen Brunson block that was overturned and called a clean play after a foul, whether you want to talk about, and obviously, the final screen that really has everybody in a tizzy, without question, the biggest call of the game that's not even questionable is that kickball call. It clearly is off his hand. And they've already come out and acknowledged they made a mistake and that it clearly wasn't a kickball. The issue I have with it, and let's be fair, even as Knick fans, because if it happened to us, we'd all be furious. That one's fair. Why is that? Why are things... That's not a judgment call. Like, and typically, that's what football things aren't reviewable because they're judgment calls. Pass interference, oh, you're going to review every single pass interference. Like, for the most part, like, this is clearly, if it's off his foot, it's a kickball. If it's off his hand, it's not a kickball. Why is that not reviewable? Why are blocked shots reviewable? Why are balls thrown off a foot and out of bounds reviewable, but not thrown off a foot in the middle of the court for a kickball? It makes absolutely no sense. It should have been a reviewable call. They did have a challenge. It should have been a reviewable call. It makes absolutely no sense. And it completely changes the narrative of the game. Of course. But that, it doesn't have to be the game right there. The Knicks do score the three-pointer. Like, it doesn't have to end the game. And the screen, let's say this again. It is a foul. If you are complaining about the final illegal screen, you are complaining about whether or not it should be called in that moment. It is clearly a foul. It was challenged. It was reviewed. It was deemed a foul by everybody who viewed it. It is a foul. And I'm telling you right now, I 100%, we would not be clamoring and screaming or whoever is about that call in that moment if it wasn't for Stan Van Gundy saying what he said. Because I'll tell you something right now. I've watched a ton of Knick games this year. I've watched a lot of NBA games. The idea that that call is, this is how he put it, that call is never made. And when I say never, I mean never. I completely disagree with that. The idea that calls aren't made in the final seconds of games, whether they be offensive screens, whatever they may be. I have, without question, seen an illegal screen call made in the final moments of a game. I've seen every kind of call made in the final moments of a game. The idea that that call cannot be made in that time frame, while I agree, and I heard, you know, Turner in the post game talk about he likes to see the players be the people who determine the outcome of the game and not the referee. Yeah, I think nobody would be complaining. No Knick fan would be complaining if that whistle wasn't called. No one would be screaming here saying that there was an illegal screen. But you know what? It might show up in the final. It might show up in the 2-minute report because it was an illegal screen. He was moving. It was a foul. That is not. The kickball is far more an egregious call, mainly because he didn't see it. It happens. The Knicks got the benefit of a bad call. It should be reviewable to change it. I don't know why it's not. But the idea that, oh my God, they got this it happens. That they made the same call on the Knicks. Jalen Brunson's dribbling the ball out of bounds. It clearly goes off the defender's foot and out of bounds. It's called Pacers ball. The only difference is one play is reviewable and the other one isn't. That's on the league and how they handle kickball calls. I have no idea why. But to complain about it, go ahead and complain about it. Go ahead and complain about it. Cry about it. The Knicks made the plays. The Knicks won more games than the Pacers. The Knicks got the 2 seed to get home court advantage. And sometimes home court advantage might mean you get the call. Win more games in the regular season so the calls the games in your building. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. Did DiVincenzo hit that three? Did Anunoby get those steals? Did Josh Hart get those offensive rebounds? Did Brunson score those points? Dan in Belmar. What's up, Dan?
Hey, what's going on, C-Mac?
What's up, buddy?
Listen, I hear you talking about the calls that were made and calls that weren't made. Doesn't it feel like now after every big game or any game in general now that fans talk about exactly what we're talking about now, the calls that were made or the calls that weren't made and how it would have changed the game? And
yep.
Instead of talking about the actual team and the game, you know, what's happening on the court or the field?
Well, I mean, I suppose that's in fairness to me. I just did 90 minutes on what happened on the court and everything. I'm getting to the fouls now.
People are calling.
Yeah, I'm getting to the fouls now because on social media, I mean, that's a talking point of the game. Like, I saw the story on TMZ, Pacer fans upset with screen call. Like, that's going to be the talking point. That's what they're talking about right now in Indiana in sports radio, and that's going to be a talking point of the game because those calls do impact the game. And clearly, I mean, listen, when you call a kickball that never hits a foot, I mean, that's going to be people are going to talk about it. When you have an illegal screen that the broadcaster on the game tells you he's never seen that called before in his life, like, come on, like that's it's going to be a talking point. But I agree with you that this game isn't decided strictly on calls. Like,
no, it's not. And it feels like every time that if it's not a blowout game, then, you know, people are talking about the calls that were made or the calls that weren't made. I'm just so sick of it. I'd rather talk about the players and you
I
know,
agree.
Who needs to perform better.
I agree. The referees have become a major talking point in all sports. In all sports.
In football,
they've become the talking point of almost every game. And you're right, because when there's close plays, you always feel like if the referees made a mistake, you're screwed. If you made a mistake, it's your fault. If the other team made a great play, what are you going to do? But if the impartial referees make a bad call, well, now you've been screwed.
Right. And getting away from basketball, because I think it's harder to implement in basketball, but talking about the MLB, I think, you know, I never was for the idea of robot umps and everything, but I see what they're doing in whatever league. I think it's the Atlantic League. They're doing the robot umps and the challenges with the players. They touch their helmet if they disagree with the call.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 5-second thing, and it seems to be working. I was never a fan of it, but just seeing it being implemented and listening to all, you know, MLB fans talk about how they got screwed because, you know, Angel Hernandez was behind the plate or he missed this call, missed that call.
Right.
Just, I'm so sick of it. Just move to the robot umps. Tennis did it a while ago with the in and out, and they don't have any arguments anymore.
No, I don't disagree. If we have the technology to make sure we get the calls right, and it's a quick, fast moving system, that's the problem with some of the reviews. They take forever, and then you feel like you got the call wrong. Like I could see the Jaylen block. I thought he got it, but yeah, you could see contact with the body, but they overturned it, and there was a call on Anunoby where I thought he didn't even touch the player. And they got a foul. Calls go both ways. And it sucks when that becomes a major talking point of the game because that's not what decided this game. I mean, they're big calls, of course. Any decision. That's a difference. The Knicks get the ball back off that kickball. It would have been Pacers' ball on a broken play that could have really led to a layup. Instead, the Knicks get the basketball and hit a three. Of course, it impacts the game. There's so many calls that happen like that throughout the entire game where you don't even bother to make a challenge because it's in the first quarter or the second quarter and you don't want to bother making a challenge and wasting your challenge early on in the game. It's still a difference of 3 or 4 points sometimes. Like it's the way it goes, but we focus on it like that's the reason the team lost. The Pacers blew the game. The Knicks won the game. And when Turner says you'd like to see the players decide the game, the players did decide the game. They always do. Ralph in the Bronx. What's up, Ralph?
Hey, what's going on?
What's up, buddy?
I just wanted to talk. How are you doing? I just want to talk about I didn't even talk about the foul calls or anything like that. I'm just talking about the difference between the last two series. Like, last series, Embiid, Maxey, great players, all-stars, and everybody knew that, you know, Brunson was maybe not the best player on the court. But in this series, he's clearly the best player on the court, dominant. And Indiana really doesn't have that kind of a player. It seems like they all running around, they're some sort of motion offense.
Mm-hmm.
They're all like making shots, and there's nobody clearly to guard, double team, or anything like that at all. And I think that's a big difference, that Brunson's clearly the best player on the court at all times. And it's fun to see that in some ways, but it's very even. It's sort of like it's a reverse osmosis, in other words. Like, the Knicks have become the Sixers, and Indiana's the other way around now.
You see, the difference is, though, that Jalen Brunson was the best player on the court in several instances in the Philadelphia series. So, I mean, it's not like it was strictly – it's not like they went up against, Jokic or I don't know, healthy Giannis or LeBron James 5 years ago or whatever. It's not like there was a guarantee the best player on the court was on the other team. Jalen Brunson's been that good where he was better than Embiid, he was better than Maxey in parts of that series. The Knicks have had the best player on the floor against Philadelphia, and without question, they have the best player on the floor now. Jalen Brunson's the best player on either team. There's no question about it, he is. And, you know, that in the NBA, that should, I mean, that says a lot. And if he's going to score 40 points a game, he's been incredible in what he's been able to do. And they don't have a player to match, I agree. And if you look at it, you know, early on, Halliburton hit some shots, but he's supposed to be their guy. Siakam, you know, is supposed to be their guy. Turner brings, you know, Turner's a good player. I mean, he has a little bit of that Embiid in him where he's, at his size, able to shoot. He goes 2 for 6 from three, and he hits that one miraculous one at the end of the third quarter. I thought Naismith was extremely athletic. Right, that dunk where he goes in sideways was really impressive. And then they have guys on the bench. Obi Toppin's athletic. McConnell can clearly get to the basket and make some shots, as he went 9 for 16 and scored 18 points in this game. And the bench, I mean, that's the thing. The Knicks have the better overall player and the biggest star, and the Pacers have a deeper team. The Knicks are rolling, you know, as Tommy Lugar likes to say, they roll dude heavy, but there's only 7 of them. The Pacers are bringing more dudes to the party. And they're going to need every one of those 40 points. 877-337-6666. McMonagle here with you. We'll come back, continue to take your phone calls. We'll start the transition and get into maybe a little bit of Rangers game 2 after the Bruins get off and just dominate against the Florida Panthers in game 1 of their series last night. Also, obviously, the baseball we can get to as we take you all the way to 5 o'clock. And the Mets do get a win, a much-needed win, to end a 3-game skid. Alonso with a much-needed day off. And we should get into Pete Alonso, because I keep hearing things about Pete that bother me.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
A high pop-up. He's going to do it. At shortstop, Jeter. Jeter on the outfield grass makes the catch. The Yankees win. The Yankees win. And Doc Gooden pitches a no-hitter.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
So, you know, as we get ready for more of this Knicks-Pacers series, and we obviously have Reggie Miller doing game 2. I'm looking forward to that. I want Reggie around. I do. I'm sure they'll do a feature with Reggie and Spike. You know, they'll do something stupid. Like, you know, but still, having Reggie around this series is just, for me, fun and nostalgic. And as we talk about the 90s a little bit, another name that is obviously so connected with those 90s Knicks teams is Pat Riley. And while Pat Riley has become the enemy, pretty much, you know, building one of the better run franchises in the NBA out there in Miami with the Heat, and obviously coaching the Heat for many years against the Knicks, and now being one of the better executives, really, I guess, in the history of the sport. That's how good he's been. And as much as he's been the enemy, I still, there's something about Pat Riley. And maybe it's because I really like that HBO show about the Lakers winning time. And Pat Riley was involved in that, or at least his character was. And the idea that he's the coach of that team that we love so much. And he's just really good at his job. I've never really disliked him, and I've never liked him more than I have right now. Because I told you yesterday that Jimmy Butler being caught on camera, not, I shouldn't say caught, literally inviting the camera to record him, killing the Knicks and Celtics, saying if he were on the floor, they'd be going home, and who is Josh Hart? All the comments he had to say. Pat Riley, yesterday, and I guess the season finale presser or whatever, is asked questions about it and completely kills Jimmy Butler. I loved every second of it. And he pretty much just said, you know, if you're not playing on the court, then you should probably shut your mouth and not comment on the Celtics. If you're not playing the Celtics, if you're not on the court playing the Celtics, if you're not on the court playing the Knicks, then you should probably keep your mouth shut and your opinions about those teams to yourself. I mean, oh, thank you, Pat Riley. What a tremendous job. He's 100% correct. You were saying it yesterday. I don't really care that much, but it just bothers me when players who aren't playing, and I respect Jimmy Butler and what he's done, you know, in the postseason. I mean, although if you look at his numbers, his, you know, someone sent me a bunch of stuff after I said yesterday that he's such a great playoff player. Listen, they win. They were in the NBA Finals last year. So I respect him, but those comments are just weak. And to have Pat Riley, an executive, how often do you hear, like, an executive or someone with the team, a coach or a another player even, or an executive, the GM of the team, come out and literally tell his player, yeah, you should probably shut your mouth. I mean, you should probably shut up. Like, that never happens. But Pat Riley don't care. Pat Riley does not care. And as we, you know, think of those 90s teams, and we're getting ready for our garden party, which again will take place again tonight. There's a garden party every single night here in New York now as we get ready for game two of the Rangers-Carolina Hurricane series. And I'm looking forward to it. I want to see how the Rangers react to the first 10 minutes of this game. Because I would think Carolina, who, I don't want to say didn't play well because they played fine, but we know how important the special teams are. I mean, the fact that they allowed those two power play goals as quickly as they did, the fact that they went 0-for-5 on their power play, the fact in the late moments, the Rangers made all the plays. The Rangers, you know, despite taking a penalty there where it was about to set it up for a 6-on-4 with the goalie pulled, win the faceoff and create the situation where they end up taking a penalty. And just everything about that game, the certainly the power play, but then just, you know, the Rangers and how they played defensively, where for most of the game, now at the end of the game it changed, no doubt about it. The last few minutes, Carolina was able to get their offense together. And even though they had the time of possession heavily in their favor, they really didn't get them a lot of shots. They had, for most of the game, Carolina had their lowest shot total of the entire season. So just the way that game played, the way they, you know, you want to try and even the series and take one at the Garden and split the series and flip the home ice advantage, I would think Carolina is going to come out on fire to start this game tonight. And the Rangers are going to have to withstand that first 10 minutes or so. And Igor is probably going to have to be on top of his game. And the Rangers are going to have to continue to do what they do, which is score on the power play. And what they've gotten so far out of their stars has been everything you could have wanted. And really the difference in what happened last year with the Devils and what's happening now. I mean, they've played 5 games. They've won all 5. right? And we know how Washington didn't belong, but they come out, and I was concerned about that first game of this series. I really was. I talked about this yesterday. I was concerned about the layoff. I was concerned about the walkthrough cake nature of that first series compared to what Carolina, who, yes, won in five and got a little bit of a break, but still hard-fought series against the Islanders, had to come back from down 3-0 and all that. Like, had to come back from losing 3-0, should I say? And I just thought the momentum might have been a little bit on Carolina's side, but Zibanejad comes right out, scores that early goal, could have had three goals in that first period, only had two. You get Panarin to score, you get the power play to look the way it did and score within seconds of being on the ice to get, like, it was just a really good performance and a performance that makes me very confident. Both game ones were confidence builders in different ways for both of these teams as we prepare for a week of back-to-back playoff games. I think the Rangers played a good, clean, crisp game. The Rangers took their strengths and ran with it. The Rangers did what they do best and won a hockey game and held this team that does a lot of the same things similarly. You know, their power play and their PK. I mean, that's the best penalty kill in the league, and they took it right to them and scored both times they were on the power play and quickly, where the Knicks, I don't think, played their best game. Where the Knicks, you know, for a while there, the rebounds were kind of even, and the Pacers were getting the better of the play and leading for a lot of the game. But then the Knicks do what they do as well in their strength, which is finishing off these games and playing well down the stretch, and Brunson being an absolute stud. And for me, both of these game ones, both victories, both at home, give a distinct advantage to our teams here for the rest of the series. And both of us, and now especially after the Bruins take game one against Florida, you could be, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but can you imagine both teams in an Eastern Conference final against Boston? Knicks, Celtics, Rangers, Bruins, both in the Eastern Conference finals? That would be something. That would be something. Have to get, you know, that, I mean, I know we already had Philadelphia in the first round of the Knicks series. No one cares about Washington. No one really cares about Carolina either. But two series going on at the same time, night after night, New York, Boston. Oof. That'd be fun. Let's get there. What do you say? Mario in Long Beach. What's up, Mario?
Hey, how you doing, Big Mac? Great show.
Good, buddy. Thank you. What's going on?
You know, Brunson is so good. Right now, I think he's the second best player in the league. And what's very interesting is, I think you actually, not even realizing it, you were confirming it too, because earlier, if you remember, somebody was saying something. You were talking about being the best player on the court, and then you were like stretching, said, oh, you don't have Jokic or a healthy Giannis, which doesn't exist now, or and then you said, or LeBron 5 years ago. Well, it's not 5 years ago.
Right.
So you're confirming the same thing I'm saying. Right now, Brunson is the second best player in the league behind Jokic. No doubt. And certainly he's even better than Tatum. Because if you look at Tatum in the first round, he only averaged 19 points a game.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to average 40. He doesn't have to do it. And I mean, and Giannis is hurt right now. So it's not like I'm saying, you know, Giannis isn't good anymore. He's just not, he wasn't in the series and he's out. He was hurt and he's eliminated. I don't know. I mean, you've got Luka Doncic. I don't know if you, I mean, are you ready to just call him the second best player in the NBA? He's not going to finish second in the MVP.
Big Doc, let me make a point. Okay. I'm not saying he's playing that way now. Right now, he's playing. He's got four games in a row.
Yeah.
He's playing that way. Did you see who the only other three players who has 440 points in a row? Did you see the list?
I did. It was Kobe, Jordan, and Oscar Robertson.
It was six for Jerry West 50 years ago.
Okay. And all right, so different stats.
Then
okay.
four for Bernard King, mm-hmm. like 40 with maybe 35 years ago. And four for Michael Jordan 40 years ago. Now, if you remember, real quick, and then I'll listen to your response, the game before he hit the four in a row, he had 39. He missed one, he would be at five. You know?
Mm-hmm.
He's playing better than anybody else in the world right now. I'm not saying he's the best player in the world, but he's playing that way. And I believe if he goes in, if we go into a series with Boston, he's the best player on the court. He's right now better than Tatum. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. I mean, we'd have to see how that series goes. And I mean, you're not wrong necessarily the way he's playing. And I saw the stat that it was 35 points and 5 assists or something, and the names were even better than those. I mean, the names were, although Jerry West is a great one, Bernard King is one hell of a scorer, but not one of the greats of all time. I mean, 35 and 5 for 4 straight games or 5 straight games or something, 4 straight games was Kobe, LeBron, Jordan, Oscar Robertson. I mean, those are, I mean, arguably Mount Rushmore. Say, you know, minus a few other names. But they've been, I mean, he's been incredible. But to be fair to Boston, they have a more well-rounded team. And they had an opponent, which I respect Miami culture, and I just praised Pat Riley, without Jimmy Butler. I mean, they lost game 2 and then really didn't have much of a, without Porzingis, they kind of had an easy go of it. Tatum doesn't have to score 43. The Knicks, he has to score these points or they don't win. Now, I'm not trying to take it away from him. I'm just saying you can't look at other players and say, who else is doing this? Well, who else needs to? Who else needs to? I don't know. I'm not saying that, you know, Brunson's great. And yeah, right now he is playing like the best player. He's the best player. Forget the second best player. He's the best player in the NBA right now. No one through this. No, I mean, Edwards, right? Anthony Edwards would be the only other one. Right now, he is the best player in the NBA. Jalen Brunson is playing better currently than any other player right now. And in the postseason, after those first two games where he got out of the box a little slow in the first two games against Philadelphia, Jalen Brunson's been the best player in these playoffs. Him and Anthony Edwards are the two best players in these playoffs. It's not even close. But I mean, let's get through this series before we stand. I know I did it myself, only because I was talking about the matchups of possible New York Boston in both Eastern Conference Finals of both these their respective sports, which would be fun. But I mean, if you're really looking at it, I mean, it's, I don't want to jump ahead and say who's the best player here, who's the best player there. You know, if Tatum needs to score 43, is he capable of it? Sure. But right now, no. Jalen Brunson's the best player in the NBA. He is playing like it. He deserves that moniker for the moment. He's been the best player in the playoffs, and he is, you know, almost single-handedly, offensively at least, dragging his team into the Eastern Conference Finals as they take game 1 against the Pacers. Game 2, Wednesday night. Reggie Miller will be on the call. Knicks-Pacers in a hard-fought series. Reggie Miller on the call. The Rangers also going through the playoffs. We got playoff games every night. It's amazing.